everyone, and welcome to episode 2, or technically episode 3 of Dawson's Weekly, the podcast about Dawson's Creek, led by your intrepid hosts, Catherine and Katie. A couple of things then from our first two episodes. I got one of the funniest audio messages I've ever gotten from Amy. Hiya, Amy. She says she's our number one fan. She said the theme tune, she thinks that it was Paula Cole in the first season.
I thought it was Paula Cole.
But then another Amy has got in contact on Facebook and she said, no, we were right. It was Jan Arden, which is the, we were all calling it Hearts and Arrows. It's actually called Run Like Mad. The Jan Arden in the first instance and then Paula Cole from then on. So who the hell knows if any, like, you know.
If anyone else called Amy would like to get in touch. Amy's only. Watching the programme sometimes as an almost 40-year-old is problematic. But when that theme tune kicks in, I am 15. I am confused.
I know I love the Paula Cole one, but I really like the Jan Arden one. I really like Run
Yeah,
Like
I
Mad.
Think Paula Cole was a bit too sort of full on, and maybe it needed to be a bit understated, but it makes the hairs on my the back of my neck stand up a little bit when that theme tune comes on. I do love it.
What's that called? AMSR is it called? Anyway, right, so should we get into it then? Episode 2.
We shall. I believe it's called Dance or The Dance, is it?
It might be called The Dance, yeah. And that's the least of our worries, I think, the dance. So I know you've got a couple of things you want to say about the very beginning before we get into the theme tune. Dawson mansplains a film to Joey.
Well, Dawson begins the episode. He's doing another one of his little vanity projects. And I was thinking, how many, when I was the age that Dawson was and the people, the friends that I had, how many of them had like camcorders and all this film equipment?
You know, how many of them had fake human heads, Katie?
Well, yeah, that is. I never asked, and I wouldn't like to think. But yeah, so Dawson in his hugely overprivileged life has got his camcorder out, and he's doing another one of his little vanity projects, and that's how episode one starts. And Joey is the heroine, of course, and she's telling Pacey, who's the male lead. And I thought this bit was funny because she says, "I know what I saw. It was big and it was ugly and it attacked me." And I was sort of like, I was watching this episode half asleep. I've had like a really tiring week. And I was like, was it Dawson? And then I realised that they're doing. But yeah, like every creepy male director, I think we should start calling Dawson Weinstein, because there's a lot of parallels. But basically, he wants to push Joey into doing quite an intimate scene. It's a kiss. I mean, it's not that intimate, but they're 15. What are they going to be doing? Joey doesn't want to do it. She doesn't want to kiss Pacey. I mean, there's a whole lot of rhetoric about that that we're getting into, but why do you? And Dawson decides to try and, get her on side and explain why she should. So in the first instance, Dawson tries to helpfully explain to Joey what a film actually is. You know, that it's not reality, because obviously poor little Joey's never come across that concept before.
Dawson's Creek is very meta.
And this is, and we'll get onto it later on in the episode, I'm sure.
Yeah, we will.
Allegorical is a word. It was genitalia in the first episode. This episode is brought to you by allegorical, but also sphincter. But again, we'll get onto that later. So after trying to mansplain what a film is, Dawson, you know, this doesn't work. So Dawson then asks Jen to do it for him, which is weird on so many different levels. And Joey calls Pacey, and I'll repeat it verbatim, she says that he's repelling and a cretin, and I have to say cretin is not a word that we should be using now, but apparently it was absolutely fine in the late 90s. But that is pretty harsh for Pacey.
She's a harsh bitch, is Joey. Like, she says a lot of shit to people over the years, and I mean, we're going to get into it later, aren't we? The sort of stuff that Joey says to people.
Joey is old before her time.
She is, but if you think about the first episode, she was genuinely mean to Jen there.
Yes, she was. And to be fair, I think at this point where they're talking about the kiss and Dawson's trying to persuade the girl that he sort of fancies to kiss his best friend, which is all kinds of wrong, and Joey doesn't want to do it. Joey says, maybe you should do it to Dawson. And Dawson says, oh no, my lips are reserved for somebody else. And that somebody else is, of course, Jen. So Joey gets in there and basically suggests that, why hasn't he kissed her yet? Because she's from New York. I mean, I really feel for the women of New York. for this whole thing, because New York seems to be substituted for I don't know, easy, you know. So Joey basically thinks that they should have kissed because Jen's from New York and she'll kiss anybody. But apparently Jen is a self-proclaimed virgin, and this is something that I wanted to dwell on a little bit, because what does
that
mean?
This comes back, that comes back, doesn't it? Because Jen did tell us in the first episode she's a virgin.
A virgin, I understand. What is a self-proclaimed virgin? Because I'm wondering, you know, I'm 38, I've lived a life. If I self-proclaim myself a virgin, can I be a self-proclaimed virgin?
Should we all just become self-proclaimed virgins? I mean, I've had two children.
I think we can.
Let's do it.
But if you self-proclaim it, I mean, I'm not sure why Joey wanted to kind of focus on the self-proclaimed part of it, presumably because she's been a snidey bitch and she thinks
she's not.
But yeah, let's all be self-proclaimed virgins for January. It's a good New Year's resolution.
Listen, if we can think of another way of saying dry January or veganuary, self-proclaimed virginuary.
Dry is probably not the word you want to use.
Right, so we've got the opening, we've got the theme tune, which we've chatted about at length. I don't mind the Jan Arden one. I don't mind it. Oh no, but that's what I was going to say. Apparently the Paula Cole one is coming back. They're in talks with Paula Cole to put it back in because apparently people are so offended by it.
I mean, that is weird. It was so long ago. I can't really remember. I remember the theme tune.
If you've got enough time to bitch and moan.
COVID is raging around the UK. I really don't care.
If you've got enough time to bitch and moan about the Dawson's Creek theme tune, like,
check your privilege, people.
Yeah, let's check our privilege, everyone. I have to say, we're going to go straight into it with Tamara and Percy. They have a conversation. So he comes into her classroom and they essentially, what I would describe, have a lover's tiff in front of a classroom full of students.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bearing in mind as well, when I was at school and you saw teachers, you sort of saw them as people that weren't really people. You know, you didn't
Absolutely.
Think about them having sex lives and things. But at the same time, you did want to kind of think of them having sex lives in a really weird way. So we used to always say, Mr. Smith's having an affair with Mrs. Jones.
It's Yeah.
We would, and all that would be, would Mr. Smith had walked into the classroom and given Mrs. Jones the key to the gym cabinet. And we would be like, oh, he's hot for her. That was all it would take at school. Everyone must know that. You used to just sit there making up shit about your teachers. She's literally stood there as the class starts to fill in, having a very obvious lover's tiff. And somehow this goes unnoticed.
I know. Well, it's not just that, but like, I don't know if this is the time of COVID, but how close they're stood to each other. Like, they're just like at the front of the class, with barely anything between
them. Get your mask on.
Get your mask on and stand 2 meters apart. They get into it, and Percy is so very upset with her, which, you know, he does have a right to
Understandably.
He's been abused by her. Yeah.
And
I think that one of the things I'd like to point out about the entirety of Capeside is their lack of subtlety. And I'm going to keep on coming back to this all episode. And I said about it at the end of last episode, part two, like with Dawson's mum kissing Bob in front of the house, the lack of subtlety in this place.
Can you imagine, just going back on to that, you're having an affair. I mean, I don't have a lot of experience of affairs, but I would imagine you try and keep it fairly under the radar. Your affair partner dropping you off outside the house and you like tugging off. Tonguing off, is that even a word?
No, I don't know, but I think let's coin it. It's coined, it's ours. Tonguing off, you're like Shakespeare. So they have this conversation, and then Tamara teaches Wuthering Heights.
Have the conversation. Percy wants to talk to Tamara. She reckons that they've got nothing to discuss. Now, Tamara, I think you might have something to discuss.
Oh, Tamara, you've got one or two things to discuss.
I will agree with Tamara that the time... Oh, actually, let's call her Miss Jacobs now, because she is literally teaching a fucking class of students, of which Percy is one. So she says they've got nothing to discuss. And then
we heartily disagree, Tamara.
She's taking the high ground, and that's what she should do as an adult who has done something completely wrong with what is effectively a child. So, but okay, I'm going to support her right now. You know, Tamara, you've done the right thing. You've done the right thing. You've shut him down. This is fine. Maybe we could get on, Tamara. I see a little bit of myself in you now, you know. It's fine. So Tamara starts to teach the lesson.
They do cut away, and I was going to come back to the cut away because it's hilarious. It's clever. It's really, really clever. So they're talking about Dawson's script and how they're going to sort it out. And they talk about Scream. What do we know about Scream?
Oh, this is in the film class that Dawson's not allowed into. But
They're in the canteen. They're in the canteen. And they talk about Scream. What do we know about Scream? Let's see if you can remember anything from the last podcast we recorded. Kevin Williamson wrote Scream.
I think he needs help.
Do you know what they describe Scream as in this scene, which is just so funny? A rip-off of a rip-off.
There we go. Was it a rip-off of a Hitchcock film?
Yes, it is. Well, no, it uses some of the tropes from the Hitchcock film. It killed Drew Barrymore really early on, and Psycho kills Janet Leigh really, really on. But they call it a rip-off of a rip-off. I love the intertextuality in this, but also I love Kevin Williamson's shameless self-promotion as well.
It's nice that he's critiquing himself to a certain extent. It's nice that he's bringing his films into it. I've remembered his name now, and I do want to contact him and check if he's all right, because this whole series is problematic, Kevin, but we'll get back to that.
we'll get there, don't worry. Right, so
but well done for shilling your own film.
No, like, listen, well done, Kevin. Let's go to the scene about Wuthering Heights, which can I just say as well, there seems to be some sort of like mix up with the classes, because this is really pedantic of me and I don't give a shit, I'm going to say it. Nellie Olson is in Percy's class, but she's also in Dawson's film studies class, which he's already been told he can't take because it favours the year above him.
Oh, I mean, I still don't even understand what this means, but Nellie's really old.
I know, she's...
Nellie used to be on Little House on the Prairie, so she must be about 80.
She's the year above them, I'm sure that's the point. And, like, she's in Percy's English class.
Yeah, I mean, she does look like the kind of girl who got held back because she wasn't the brightest.
But her dad's rich, so she would never have been held back. The rich can do anything, Katie, you know that.
No, that's true. That's very true.
So they talk about Wuthering Heights. And Tamara's teaching Wuthering Heights.
Sorry, this always makes me want to sing that song, and I'm not going to do it.
You would really get into your falsetto. Oh, I know, yeah. She's teaching Wuthering Heights.
I have to say, when I watched this scene, I was waiting for her to start with some sort of like a paedophile Lolita or something.
That would have been better.
But she didn't. She started off with something that was fairly average, I guess. It was a very basic English kind of book that you would read. I couldn't see any huge problems with it. It seemed fine, but it wasn't fine, was it?
What's Tamara's take on Wuthering Heights? One of the greatest, greatest love stories of our time. Undisputed love stories of our time as well. Greatest love, undisputed love stories of our time. Kate Bush wrote a song about it, which you didn't want to sing. Sad about that, but okay. Asks Nellie Olson her opinion, and Nellie Olson goes, she was just pushing Heathcliff away because she didn't know how to deal with her feelings. And Tamara launches into a speech about how Heathcliff and Catherine never belonged together.
No one asked for this speech. I might not be in the best position to comment on this. You are actually a teacher, Catherine, but I would assume that the most important thing is your students' opinions as opposed to your own. You know, I might be wrong. We're quite narcissistic as people. Maybe you just spend your classes telling people.
I mean, I do, yeah, actually, surprisingly. No, but also your own opinions, very, very, very much influenced by the fact that you are currently, I don't know, abusing a child. So she says that they never belong together. And in one of the most anti-feminist readings of Wuthering Heights ever to hit popular culture, describes Catherine as a whimpering, mentally unstable, wet rag following Heathcliff around.
Why is she saying that?
But she says that Heathcliff was young and had a lot to learn and was better off without Catherine. I mean, I can't think why she would say that. I can't think.
Why?
No reason. While Percy sits at the front of the class glowering.
With an erection, I'm sure. is that too far? He's 15, you know. He's got a lot of hormones going on. I think for her to just come into class and be really sort of like, Pacey, don't talk to me, this is inappropriate. And then she literally uses her English class as a way to write Pacey a Dear Fucking John letter. I am sorry. Who employed her? Who employed this woman?
She's shit.
And the thing is, Pacey gets what she's saying. She gets what she's saying. Surely every other person in there, apart from Nellie Olsen, who's completely full of air, maybe Cliff, because, you know, he had probably had an injury due to basketball or something. But everybody must understand the what is implied there. It is not, and we go back to it, it's not subtle. None of Dawson's Creek is subtle.
Oh, well, actually, I would disagree with you. I think some of it is quite subtle. We'll get on to it.
Stay tuned.
Yes, yeah, stay tuned for that. But to end this scene, after Tamara taking down one of the greatest, truly canon English literature works of our time, she tells us that Bronte should have saved her ink. Jesus fucking Christ. Tamara. What a way to inspire the youth of today.
Tamara has issues.
Yeah, so what a way to get people, young people into reading.
Tamara should have saved her ink.
You did try and make that dirty, but I mean, I'll have it.
I'm trying to make that some sort of like a loaded statement. But
so that's how the episode starts.
Speaking about dirty, after we've gone from the very weird sexually charged lesson that Tamara, aka Miss Jacobs, has taught, we go back to the film class that Dawson's like, what's he doing? Like, what's the word when you break into a house and live there?
Creepy.
When you're not meant to. What's it called again? Squatting. So Dawson's literally squatting in this, and in case anybody's listening from any other country, squatting means so many different things, so this is going to be odd anyway. But in England, you can basically take over a house that's empty and you can squat there, and it doesn't mean that you just sit there doing loops and lunges until your ass becomes amazing. It means that you just like take the piss and smoke weed and, you know, don't pay any rent. But Dawson is effectively squatting in this film.
And you
class.
Have protection.
We have protection, yeah. I don't know how, but there's something called squatter's rights.
Squatter's rights?
I might need to look into that when the entire finance system in the UK crashes and I can't afford a roof over my head anymore.
Someone find out and let us know.
But anyway, so Dawson's squatting in the film class that he's not meant to be in. And I think is it Cliff the Jock?
Cliff the Jock.
And Kevin Williamson, I mean, we're going to talk to you a lot during this. You'll probably not listen to us. But if you do, you know, there's a few hints and tips coming your way. If I was going to write a jock in an all-American TV show for kids or for teens or tweens or whatever you want to call them, Cliff might not be the name that I'd give him.
I thought that. I was like, gosh, what a strange name. What a strangely old name.
I mean, literally, the only person I know called Cliff is Cliff Richard. He's about 100 and he has questionable sexuality, which is fine for him. But, you know, it's not a name that kind of gets you heated up, is it? I mean, I don't know what sort of names would get you heated up.
Pacey.
You know, the obvious sort of job names, like the Jareds and the...
No, I was thinking that actually recently. I know we're going off on a tangent, fuck it. But I do not believe Pacey is a name.
Is it a nickname?
But what?
Pacifier? Has anyone, if anybody listening knows of anybody else in the entire world called Pacey, apart from the fictional character Pacey Witter?
There is going to be 22-year-olds named Pacey.
Because their parents got pissed at 15 and boned watching Dawson's Creek.
100%.
Yeah, don't do that. Well, it's too late now anyway. But sorry,
it's too late. Sorry, it's 22 years too late.
We have gone on a tangent. The reason I was bringing Cliff into it is that he's in the film studies class legitimately. Dawson is still squatting, look up the word. And he has got a proposal for a film. And I just wanted to say the name of the film because it's literally the best film name ever. And Cliff's movie, because he's a jock, he's called it, wait for it, Helmets of Glory. Helmets of Glory.
Is he making a pornography?
If that is not a porno, and I don't want to search for it, but if that is not a porno, seriously, I'm out. That has got to be the best name for a pornographic film ever, Helmets of Glory.
Cliff and Nellie Olsen, Helmets of Glory.
In Helmets of Glory.
It's basically the pornography in which football players in helmets have sex. Done it. We're done. If it doesn't exist exactly like that, someone is missing a trick.
See, I feel like I'm dirtier than you because I thought the word helmet for me meant more than a head helmet, but we'll probably leave it at that for our audience.
Which is why we've made it into a porno. Come on.
If anyone's listening from America, they're like, what's a helmet? You got it cut off really early. Move on. It's more hygienic. Apparently. Right, okay. So we'll move on from helmet to glory to the dance.
No. We're going to talk about kissing.
Oh, God, yeah. This is the worst scene ever. I actually think I've blanked this out of my mind because it was so horrifically bad.
I think you probably have. Shall I give you some positives about this scene?
I mean, if you can, I'd love them.
No, listen, I've got one. Don't worry. Right, I'm on it. So Dawson goes to talk to his dad about how to kiss.
As you do.
And is very open to that conversation. And I actually think that there is some quite positive messages about talking to your parents about these things. There you go. That's a positive.
Actually, can I just interject for a change?
Shocking.
Just before Dawson goes to talk to Mitch about kissing, Dawson's looking for his camcorder, and that's why he starts to talk to his dad.
Oh, where is his camcorder? I forgot about this.
And this is why I won't give... Dawson is fucked up because his parents have just gone too far. So banging on the coffee table in the first episode. So Dawson's dad says, oh, it's by our bed, the camcorder. You might want to change the tape.
Inappropriate, Mitch. Inappropriate.
I'm just leaving that there. He's literally just said, I've made a sex tape with your mum. It's still in your camcorder. Take it out if you want. But if you might be curious. Anyway, sorry, go on. Back to the...
No, you were so right about that. Obviously blanked that one out of my mind as well.
And every time I think that Dawson's a dickhead, I think also he's been brought up in this ridiculous, precocious household. And I do feel a bit sorry for him sometimes. And this is one of those times.
I think that we could probably... I think that his parents are so interesting. And like, we really need to get into it. I don't really understand right now why Dawson's mum's having an affair. And I don't know whether it is this concept of like shattering this perfect sort of... Cape Cod.
Dawson had to have an issue, didn't he, that wasn't just his massive forehead and his parents' sex life. So maybe it was that.
So it's just a narrative function. Absolutely. And they have this, what I would describe as TMI conversation about kissing. Starts off very well, but then his dad...
I mean, does it?
Yeah, no. They have a really lovely conversation in which Dawson asks his dad advice. Now, what goes wrong with this conversation is when his dad goes into what I would describe as too much detail about his first kiss with his mum, including the way the chapstick felt when they kissed.
I noted this. So first of all, the worrying thing is that Dawson, being Dawson, asks his dad. He doesn't say like what's a good kiss initially. He says he wants to have a chat to his dad about the mechanics of kissing. I mean, there's nothing more sexy than the word mechanics when you're talking about kissing.
Absolutely not.
But I have noted from Mitch's little speech about it, a good kiss is all about romance and chapstick. And I've put that in my notes for this episode, but I've also put it in my personal notes.
I'm going to write that down.
And I've ordered some chapstick.
I'm going to write that down.
I mean, it just feels really slippy and greasy to me, but, you know, what do I know?
It's really waxy chapstick, is it not? Mm. It's really waxy.
It makes me think of Katy Perry as well, but I digress.
Oh, of course, yeah, cherry chapstick. But I thought that there was some good messages in there, but then just Mitch just takes it too far. Like, he talks about the sensation of the chapstick on their lips when they kissed. And it's like, and Dawson sits there smiling. And I'd be like, hang on a second. I'm just going to stop you there. I just wanted a bit of advice. And then what does his dad have him do?
Just, yeah.
Snog the Joey head.
This is where, so Dawson's basically, because he's Dawson Weinstein, don't you know? He's going to be a big film director, and as part of this, he's made a prop of Joey's head out of papier-mâché. And I mean, first of all, a 15-year-old boy having a papier-mâché head of a girl.
I think it looks a bit more high-tech than papier-mâché.
I mean, I assumed it was because that's the only thing that I ever modelled with when I was younger, but I was poor.
We were all poor in comparison to this.
You know, maybe he did some sort of 3D design on a computer, but he's got this fairly decent head, and for some reason it's on the table. And what does Mitch do? Okay, Catherine, what does Mitch do?
He makes him kiss the head, the Joey head.
In front of him.
And what is going on the whole time that Dawson's possibly...
Yeah.
Joey's watching!
Joey's a proper sneak, is what I got from this episode.
Wherever you are, Joey's watching.
I mean, they've
watching.
Got these massive houses, and I mean, they're fucking huge, they really are. English houses are nowhere near as big as these huge American houses are. And we spent Christmas at my partner's parents. They've got a big house, nowhere near as big as that. You can't hear anyone doing anything. But for whatever reason, Joey is just there. No matter what's going on, no matter what part of the house, she is there. So obviously Joey's there just watching all of this horror unfold.
I'd be quite uncomfortable if I was Joey. I'd be like, ugh.
Mitch encourages Dawson to kiss the papier-mâché head of Joey in front of him whilst giving him tips about how to kiss her. And you know, Kevin Williamson, if there's anything going on, you know, if you are listening to this, if you do need some sort of help, you know, maybe we don't know how you would get it. If you do want to contact us, you know, we can listen, can't we? Because I do worry about the kind of person who thought that this would be a normal scene in a teenage drama.
But it's just, yeah, it's very strange. And I think that Joey, obviously, rather than being like, this is the weirdest thing I've ever seen, which would be my personal response to it.
And she's 15, so you've not seen that many weird things by 15. Or at least I hope you haven't.
Exactly.
That is fucking weird.
Does that make you more or less sensitive?
I don't know. I think I'm desensitized to life now.
I mean, after 2020, we're all desensitized.
Even if I came home and found my partner, like, kissing a papier-mâché head of me in front of his parents, I would be a bit disturbed.
So that happens.
But it set her up for a lifetime in Scientology, didn't it? So,
listen, thanks, Dawson's Creek, actually, on second thoughts. So that happens, and then Joey, ever the snooper, ever the watcher,
in this huge house that's about, you know, 1,000, how many thousand foot? But she always manages to find what she shouldn't.
Here's the question. Dawson's dad's called Mitch. What's Dawson's mum called?
I just call her Dawson's mum, or the slag that's having an affair. But that's all. She has got a name. And I follow her on Instagram.
No, you don't.
I know her real name in real life. Isn't she called Mary something? I do. She's lovely. She's really nice.
Are you going to Google it? Are you Googling it? Right, you Google that. And I'm going to talk about what Joey... So basically, Joey hears Dawson's mum on the phone.
In the closet.
And what she does is just open the door, like you would at any person's house.
Can I just say, Katie Holmes must be used to people hiding in the closet. Hi, Tom Cruise. Probably there.
God, we're really on fire today, aren't we? Good God. She just bursts into this room.
Oh, wow.
My Google search,
she's called Gail.
Gail, of course. Never she's called Gail. Gail and Mitch.
Yeah. Can I just say, blowing a Gail. I'm just going to leave it there.
Yeah. Well, we're going to have a lot of fun in the hurricane episode anyway. I like Joey, like, after the first episode and now into this, I do like Joey. And she says to Gail, she just looks her in the face and goes, I know.
I know.
And then walks away. Absolutely brilliant. Joey, absolute, like, mic drop from Joey. And then Gail just looks shocked. But I think what was really interesting for me about this was the juxtaposition of that conversation between Mitch and Dawson and then the conversation between Joey and Gail. I'm glad we've got a name for her now.
Yeah, I am, not just Dawson's slaggy mum. Because Mitch was still so enamoured with that first kiss. And
he really is, yeah.
But I think the one thing that I will say here, we don't know we know nothing about Mitch and Gail. Mitch might be a complete bastard. He might leave his skiddy pants on the floor. He might not cook. He might not clean. He might remember their first kiss really well, but he also might be a complete twat. I'm not excusing Gail. But at the same time, you know, we're not giving anything into their relationship other than have really inappropriate sex in front of the children. But she's obviously not doing it for sex, is she? Because she's getting a hell of a lot of that.
There is a dance on. And who is Jen going?
So far, so Carrie.
Well, there is the John Travolta references again.
I've been waiting for that line for ages.
Oh, I'm so glad that we've been the opportunity to do this. And it actually is only a little bit less cringeworthy than Carrie. And there is the John Travolta references. John Travolta's in Carrie. And Dawson invites Jen to go and watch Grease and Saturday Night Fever with him.
Just to give it some context too, you know, we were growing up in the Northeast. We didn't have dancers. But we used to, you know, we read Sweet Valley High. We grew up on a lot of American programs. The dance was that pinnacle of, like, what we never had and what we wanted to have. You know, you had your homecoming. And then seeing it on Dawson's Creek actually looked a bit shit, really.
I don't even know what homecoming actually is.
No, I don't.
Someone tell us, what the hell is homecoming? What's prom?
Well, why are you not home already? I think it was just the night that all, like, Americans decided to lose their virginity or whatever, but... Anyway.
So, Jenny's going to go to the dance, despite Dawson's very enticing offer to watch John Travolta films. It's back to Scientology.
Katie Holmes should have watched this.
She's going
films.
To dance with Cliff.
She might never have got with Tom Cruise, but anyway. Jen did initially turn Cliff down, though, didn't she?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sorry, can I just go off track for 1 second here, and you can talk about Jen and Cliff in a second. But I'm sorry, but John Travolta is fairly hot in Saturday Night Fever.
Oh, yes, fairly hot, 100% gay. But you can pray the gay away, says Scientology. Yeah, okay.
You can have that one.
Hi,
as
Tom
well.
Cruise.
Jen and Cliff are going to the dance together. Jen tells Dawson that she's agreed to go with Cliff so she can go and meet people. And Dawson, in his defence...
I have to say, whenever I start somewhere in you, I always find the most handsome man to take me out, because he will help me meet people, clearly. What the fuck? It's a date. It's clearly a date.
And in Dawson's defence, he says that to Jen.
And she insists it's not. But I think Jen's trying to do the whole, like, I'm not into looks. I like intellectuals with... big forehead. You know, she's trying to pretend that she's not a 15-year-old girl or a 16-year-old girl. He's a jock. He's fit, you know.
Dawson says that this is very thoughtless. He says it's thoughtless of Jen to go to the dance.
They're not actually going out, though. Can I just ask at this point, because it gets really confusing, because Dawson's obviously fixated on Jen. Jen's being fairly friendly to Dawson, but there's nothing. They're
exactly.
not together.
Right, and this
she
is
can a, do whatever the fuck
and
she
this
wants.
Is one of the things I have with Dawson, is that he has claimed Jen as his own without actually having any sort of conversation with her. So he gets so offended. He describes Jen as thoughtless. And actually, Dawson, no. She says that she wants to go to the dance to meet new people. And actually, she's going with Cliff because he is popular and he does know people. Yeah, she's going on a date with him. Cliff thinks she's going on a date with him. But Dawson, shut up. He laid claim to her in his mind, speaking to her like she's got no agency in Dawson's head. She's got no agency.
I have to say I was going through the same process watching this and thinking, well, you've not told her what you feel. But then later on in the episode, which we'll get to, he does tell her what he feels, and that is also absolutely,
but he hasn't yet.
No, but he does. But that's also shit too, you know. It's difficult being 15. I can almost remember it, but I would never have did any of that. I would have just sort of... It's very dramatic, isn't it?
No, yeah, and do you know what? This is, I think, the thing that with Dawson's Creek is, and one of the reasons I think we're looking at it is that it really sort of normalizes.
Resonated.
Like but it does, and it resonated, but it normalizes being massively fucking dramatic about everything. And that, like, you can just sort of, like, make sweeping statements about people and, like, well, I've laid claim, I want Jen, therefore she is mine, and I need to be super offended that she's accepted a date with another guy. You haven't actually said anything to her.
Being devil's advocate, you've got to look at it from the opinion of a 15-year-old. And I guess when I was 15, you know, I might never have said anything to anybody, but in my head, they were the person that I was going to, like, grow old with and die with. And, like, looking back, they were a bit ginger and they had a massive nose and I would never have gone near them. You build a lot in your mind as a teenager.
Well, exactly. And actually, this is one of the things that I think about Dawson's Creek, and I don't know whether it's like with the hindsight of experience, but is Dawson's Creek, did it really affect us that much, or actually did it engage with the things that were already happening? Did it play around with those ideas? And, like, did it go, like, look at how films and media affect people?
Maybe. I think it might have been a bit of both.
I mean, I think it's a question. I do think so. And I think that it's a question to ask ourselves throughout this entire thing, is that was Dawson's Creek just incredibly meta and, like, represented us as people, like, you know, maybe obviously a little bit sort of hyperbolic in certain senses, but that it was really dramatic and we really went that far in our heads, probably not as much as Dawson does in this episode. We did look at this stuff and go, well, that's how people should. Yeah. That's how men should act. Men should
go to the extreme. And if you don't do that, you can fuck off.
Yeah.
And I've literally... I've literally ended relationships over that. I'm not going to blame it on Dawson's Creek and sue Kevin Williamson, but I have really sort of like weirdly exacting standards now, and maybe that is one of the reasons why. Who knows? But it is.
Well, do you know the other reason for it is, yeah, is Sex and the City?
We'll probably do a takedown of that anyway. So we'll get back to the dance because we've got on the world's longest tangent for us.
Well, no, but I have to say, yeah, we went off on a tangent there, but I actually think it's really important. I think it's something we'll keep coming back to. But I have to say, like, Dawson's dramatic speech, and he actually talks through what's going to happen at the dance if he doesn't turn up, based on films.
And the annoying thing is, the last thing that I'll say on this, Dawson is the kind of guy that every girl wants, the one who thinks about the girl, the one who has all of these flowery, romantic words. But when you actually get him, you don't want him that much, and he's the creep who thinks too much, and that's kind of just the juxtaposition of being a woman, I guess. And there's a lot to unpack there. And also, we will probably do a Sex and the City takedown at some point, because that would be really good.
We will. Yeah, because we have a lot to say about Carrie Bradshaw. Jesus Christ, if you think we've got stuff to say about Dawson. So let's get to the dance. So Dawson puts his waistcoat on. Joey says that she'll go with him because...
Andy's beads around his neck, you know, Liz. Damon Albarn beads. They always remind me of Damon Albarn.
Joey says she's going to go with him because she wants to watch his hormonal suicide, which I thought was quite good.
My entire late teens to early 20s was a hormonal suicide. But anyway, pray for me.
I mean, I am probably certainly still in a hormonal suicide. So, so can I say that get into... And our number one fan, Amy, did suggest that we make a Dawson's Weekly Spotify, which I will do, because they get in and they're playing Savage Garden at the dance.
They are. I meant to Google it when I watched it last night. The only thing that I got from this whole thing was Gina G. Yes. Savage Garden. Savage Garden were fucking savage. They were awful.
Oh, no, they were great. Don't...
I hated them.
No, they were great. Don't be mean about Savage Garden. That was a great song, I Want You.
It was, and it has got its place in the annals of music.
Exactly.
But at the time, I hated them.
Did you really? Did you not like Truly Madly Deeply?
No, I remember going on a date with somebody, and then like they played, it was that I Want to Lay With You on a Mountain, that sort of shit.
Truly Madly Deeply.
I Want to Lay.
Truly Madly Deeply.
Terrible. Yeah.
But that's what they're doing, and their dancing is truly appalling. Oh God.
But the best thing is,
Jawson, you've done it.
Joey and Dawson start to dance together, and Joey just kind of like sways ever so slightly into the music, and Dawson's like, oh, you're good at this. I'm like, really? Seriously? She's not. She hasn't even twerked.
She's barely moving.
But yeah.
She's not done a slut drop. It's not dancing.
And then we get Gina G.
Oh,
we get Gina G. Does anyone remember Gina G?
Like, can I just say? Yeah, she was Australian, but she was
out in America.
But she must have, because she was on Bloody Dawson's Creek. Percy does have a conversation with Tamara in which he whips out his synonyms. Well done. Percy, well done.
He whips out his what, sorry? I must have missed this bit.
Synonyms,
sorry. Is this when she's just like stood hovering around the buffet table looking for mini sausages?
Any? Oh God, we're absolutely and utterly, yeah, we're beyond the pale at this point. We get it.
Tamara's hanging around the buffet. Percy pops up in quite a nice shirt. I must say, I
like Percy's shirt. I would wear that shirt.
Dawson's waistcoat does not translate to 2000 and what are we in, 2021? Percy's shirt looks really nice, lovely.
So Jen is dancing with Cliff. Joey and Dawson go to sit down and they talk about... Dawson's just the most dramatic human being on earth.
He really is, but his parents have been sexually precocious since he's about three, so I can't blame him too much.
So he sort of makes some sort of comment like, I'm enjoying my misery, because Jen is dancing with someone else. Oh God, he absolutely loves it, like in a game.
If this is why they're sat down, then this is the point where Dawson walks Joey through why he likes Jen whilst he's sat watching a dance with another man. And then he basically says, the reason that I like Jen is because she could be you, Joey, except she's Jen. which is profound.
She challenges me. She challenges me like you, but she's Jen.
But she's got tits and she's been to New York and she's probably had sex, I think is what he's trying to say. he's like you, but
she's not you. She's like you, but she's not you, which is why she's good.
But how many girls ever want to hear that? I can't remember the context he says it in, but this whole episode, the word allegorical has been used twice. And he says it's again in this particular...
No, I thought Joey uses it. She's like this allegorical thing, and then she...
No, maybe it was your yeah.
And this is... And then it gets meta again.
What does allegorical... I can't even say it. Look at me.
Allegorical.
Allegorical means... Like, metaphorical, isn't it? It's like figurative. No, it's representative of something.
An allegory. Right, so the best example I can think of it is how George Orwell's Animal Farm is an allegory. Yeah, you take something and it represents something else.
So the way that they're using the word allegorical doesn't make any sense. It's more, I guess it is metaphorical. But going back to all of the use of language on Dawson's Creek, the genitalia, allegorical, I can't imagine ever at 15 saying to somebody, you're allegorical.
No, I totally agree. I was about to go, well, I think that actually, no, you are completely right that none of us talked about allegories or genitalia when we were 15. But I think that the allegory is that they keep referring to is the fact that Dawson's film about this monster who is someone else, so it's like the Jekyll and Hyde thing, isn't it? And that's what Joey likens him to. She said, like, you're going to become the monster and the monster gets killed in the end, which is very deep on her part.
Ooh. Yeah, she is quite deep and she's quite sensible, too sensitive. But they all literally talk like people who are about 40 have been like through three divorces. It's not but anyway, this is Dawson's Creek, and you know, obviously the education system in Massachusetts. We still can't say it.
Massachusetts.
We should have picked a podcast with a, you know, we should have done like
New York. Grove. New York's really
Newcastle. We can say New York, Massachusetts. It's Massachusetts.
So then Dawson does the most dramatic thing he's done in the last two episodes.
The most dramatic thing he's done in about an hour, because let's face it, Dawson is like
so constantly dramatic.
He thrives off drama, probably because, again, his parents have like a little bit too much of a sexual life in front of him. I really don't blame and him. He's disturbed.
So he goes and he cuts in. He basically says, I've got to do something about this. And again, this idea of the ideas that it gives the audience, that this is what men should be doing, but also that this is the way men think. Because I think what's really interesting is Dawson is not a million miles off your stereotypical teenage girl, is he, in terms of the way he thinks and acts?
No.
So he goes
he
in
and 100%.
He goes in and he cuts in.
Maybe that's what Dawson's weekly. We should change it to Dawson's monthly.
Just do one episode a month where we cry at the microphone and then rage at the microphone and then go to bed and take some paracetamol. And drink a bottle of white wine. Oh, hang on a second. One out four ain't bad, because I am literally at the bottom of a bottle of white wine, which is why this is sounding more and more mental as we go along. It's in, and he's in his waistcoat, in quite a funny conversation in which he sort of tells Cliff to move aside, and Cliff's like, no.
But he does that. I mean, we've all watched those films and we've all grown up on those films where the male protagonist comes in and he finally says, this is what I'm going to do. And he walks in and he says to the guy, that's my girl. And the girl goes, swoon. And he sweeps her off her feet and they all live happily ever after. And that's what we've all been brought up on. But in real life, I think this is quite good, actually, from Kevin
exactly.
Williamson or whoever the hell scriptwriter it. This is life, and it goes down really awkwardly. And there's a whole thing about girls liking bad boys and all the rest of it. Because when a guy does the right thing, sometimes, you know, it's not like the movies. It's a little bit cringy, and that's what Dawson does. And he does the thing that, you know, every 15-year-old girl must just sit there thinking, oh, "I wish he'd cut in. I wish he'd say you're mine," and all the rest of it. And bless Dawson, he comes up there in his linen pants and his waistcoat and his beads, and he's gelled his hair, which makes his forehead look even bigger, bless him. But he goes in there and he does the thing that every girl wants a guy to do, but not the guy that's Dawson. It's the bad guy that you want to do that, and he's too busy shagging someone else usually. But yeah, he does it It's cringy.
It is cringy. It's cringy, but you are right. Like that, actually, a little change in the thing where he goes in and it doesn't end well. Jen's like, right, well, I'll leave then. They start to get into it, and Jen's like, and Jen says something like, "I'll make it easy for you. I'll leave." And she goes, "Yeah." And then we cut.
They're literally fighting over it.
Yep.
Which is the pinnacle. If you're 15, and you know, at 15, you're going through so much angst and stress, and you don't look your best. And the thought of two guys fighting over you is like, oh my God, this is like amazing. This is all I ever wanted in my life. The reality of two guys fighting over you is really embarrassing and cringy. You know, and you probably would take yourself out of that.
So she...
But then what does... So this happens, and then what does Dawson do? So Dawson has took a punt on what he was going to do. He's gone over there. He's been the big man terribly, though. And I think at one point he even says, I'm not sure what I meant to say next.
He does. He says, well, I hadn't thought that far ahead. Because I think he thought, because of the movies, Jen would just leave with him.
She would just swoon.
Yeah.
And that's what the movies do. You know, the movies get that. And we go through all of these things, and there's so many things. I mean, we don't need to get into it, but feminism, misogyny, sexism, Me Too, it's put against a backdrop of growing up on films where the guy would sort of force himself on you. He won. He kissed you. You swooned. It was all fine. And I think we're all trying to unpick that kind of romanticized idea of what a relationship is. And weirdly, this really does act it out quite well, because when you swoop in there like the hero, it doesn't always happen like it does in the movies. And in this case, it really doesn't. And then Jen leaves, but Dawson, who does he blame it on?
Who does he blame it on? He literally... explicitly.
Is it his parents who've given him this terrible upbringing? Is it himself who's watched too many films? Who is it, Catherine?
Explicitly blames it on Joey.
Which is
terrible. And then he tries blaming it on Percy whenever Joey tells him to go fucking take a hike.
Percy, where was Percy?
Well, Percy was trying to give it to his teacher, unfortunately.
How's that for a submission?
Oh, God, we're getting... we're awful. And Percy says the word manana.
Oh, I missed this. Does he really?
He says, I'll see you manana, because he's that cool.
In my head, manana.
I mean, can I just say as well, as a little aside, I googled how tall Joshua Jackson is.
He's short, isn't
no,
he?
No, he's not. He's 6'2".
Is he not?
No, he's 6'2".
Is he?
Yeah.
I was watching this last night with my partner, who's
did he watch
never
it?
Ever seen it. He did watch it. And I was saying to him, like, every time I say Percy, I still swoon. Oh. I mean, Percy, like, I like rock and roll types. I like long hair. I like Grease. I like a possible heroin addiction. That's sort of my type. Percy is very much not my type. But, you know, every time I was talking about Percy, I was like, Percy swoon. And he saw Percy and he's like, what? He's not all that.
And in this series, he's got Lego hair. His fringe is like...
But it's, for me, it's Percy's voice. Yeah, that sort of like Percy. Oh, I can't even.
No, you can't.
I'm northern, and he's very, very well. But yeah, Percy would never be my generic type. And then he popped up in Cruel Intentions as the gay with the really blonde hair.
Yeah.
But there's something about him. As a 15-year-old girl, you will somehow align your vagina and your clitoris to Percy, and he will keep it for the rest of his life. And he has.
And he
every
has.
Every time I see him pop up,
yep.
Can we cut clitoris out of this? It feels a step.
No, it's staying.
Percy has something about him.
Yeah, without a doubt, I agree. And even now, like, and he's better now as well. Like, and no, and I actually looked because I thought he was stood next to Tamara, and I thought, God, he looks quite tall. So I googled him 6'2". Percy goes, who should he bump into on the dock but Tamara? And we are back where we were last episode, which is stood on the dock with Percy and Tamara talking shit to each other.
This is what I like about TV series. They're all like this, aren't they? I mean, if I wanted to find one of my friends, I wouldn't have a clue where. If I wanted to find you, I'd probably go to the pub. But, you know, you don't get that. Like, I'll just happen to turn up at the harbour and hope she's there looking distressed and all the rest of it. But anyway, yeah, Tamara's there at the harbour. She sees him and she's shocked. We're not. But she is. She's really sorry about her behaviour. She wants to apologise. She says that she realises that what she's done is wrong. And we now enter another one of those really, really Dawson's Creek problematic scenes that makes me feel a bit ick and makes me wonder how best to handle it. Because when you first watch it, I don't want to say funny, but there's, you know, it's a programme, you get it, you don't want to dig too deep. But as soon as you take the veneer off it, it is all kinds of wrong.
So, absolutely. And I totally agree with you. Like, I watched this first time around and I was like, oh, well, you know. And then I was like, no. So she actually admits that what she's doing is illegal.
And she does. And she says it's wrong. And she apologises to Pacey. And so she should, because she very much owes that boy an apology. Pacey will not let her take the apology. He thinks that...
Where do you get off, lady, apologising? Like, he says something along the lines of, I may not be old, but I know what I'm doing. And she goes...
I think he says, I may not be of the age, the legal age of responsibility, but I am responsible. And I'm sorry, Pacey, but you've already said that you're not the legal age of responsibility. And this is where you get into, you know, you could be 15 and you could be really hot for your boyfriend who's 19. You could have sex. That is still statutory rape. And no matter what your feelings were at the time, the person who is older than you needs to take those into consideration. So this whole scene for me plays out really uncomfortably.
Well,
Tamara says that she's sorry.
Right, but she also talks about, and this will make you laugh, is she says, I could tell you what 10 years of therapy could have given me, or something like that.
She's in therapy because she's a dirty hebephile.
As the daughter of a therapist, Tamara, your therapist is shit. Get a refund.
You think you'd be more sane?
You'd hope you'd be more sane after 10 years of therapy. Like, imagine going to your therapist and going, I know I've been with you for 10 years, but I am... snogged a 15-year-old. You'd be like, oh, God.
Say it as it is. She's a hebephile. She's taken account of her own actions. She apologises. Pacey will not accept the apology. Pacey thinks that he has to take some of the responsibility because he kissed her back. Pacey is a hot-blooded 15-year-old boy whose hormones are all over. Tamara, stroke Miss Jacobs, is in a position of power. She's sexy. She's fit. She's pretty. Of course things are going to happen down there because they would, you know. He cannot say that he should have some of the responsibility for this. This is literally grooming 101.
Absolutely. And the fact that whenever he takes responsibility, her words are fair enough.
Yeah. It is not fair enough.
And then she pisses him anyway. We need to go into it more because I think that I'm being influenced by further episodes, because actually if you watched it episode by episode, you'd be like, well, she's trying. She ain't. She's not.
See, I can't quite remember what happens in further episodes.
No, wait until you get to episode 3. Your head's going to explode.
But when he says, I'm sorry, I need to take some of the responsibility, you know, she doesn't make him feel any better about that.
But she keeps kissing him.
Well, she walks away.
She lets him and then she kisses him. Yeah.
He grabs her back. And then they fall into a passionate kiss. And I'm sorry, Tamara, but you've already said you're completely screwed up.
And then kisses him.
You know, she was getting closer to him. There was eye contact. There was, and he's such a young boy. You know, he's 15 years old. I can't even if he was 16, I'd find this slightly more acceptable. Sorry, America, but it is the age of consent in England. I know it's 18 and all sorts in America, but I would find it a little bit less. I mean, it's still wrong. In England, even if you are, say, 17, well over the age of consent, and your teacher is 21, you can still get prosecuted because they are in a position of power that they have technically abused by doing what they did to you. But
so
anyway,
that happens and we're annoyed about it, and then Dawson and Jen have this conversation. Everyone's just hanging around this fucking Bayside or whatever it is, like the harbour. And Tamara is just kissing underage boys on the harbour, which is amazing.
There's a weird couple on a boat, isn't there, that we seem to get.
But there's obviously a lot of people around this harbour because Jen and Dawson are certainly there. So what's Tamara fucking thinking? There's no subtlety of anyone. Like, Dawson's mum's just practically banging someone against her front door, and Tamara's like child abusing out on the harbour. Dawson and Jen are having a chat.
Welcome to Massachusetts. Land of the free.
Massachusetts.
So Dawson is still whinging to Joey initially before he goes to meet Jen at the harbour side. Joey wants to tell Dawson that he's a bit of a dick. The word that Joey uses, sphincter. So instead of saying arsehole, instead of saying asshole, instead of saying any other colloquial word that people use to, you know, jibe people with, Joey calls Dawson a sphincter. I'm just going to leave that there. A sphincter. That's the anal muscle that controls...
Right. I'm going to defend her.
You sphincter.
In the 1990s, Wayne's World existed.
Did they say sphincter?
Sphincter. A sphincter says what?
Oh, my God. I had not. I genuinely thought that that was the most ridiculous thing I'd ever heard, but now it makes sense. I'm just going to delete all the notes I wrote about.
Yeah, so I do think, I have to say, no, because you are totally right. I do think that I reckon when they originally wrote it, it was asshole. And then they couldn't use it. So they were like, well, we'll just use sphincter because a sphincter says what?
Use sphincter.
So I reckon they thought, we can get away with that. Yeah, it's the anal muscle, isn't it? Right, Google it.
A sphincter is a circular muscle that normally maintains the constriction of a natural bodily passage or orifice, which relaxes as required by normal physiological functioning. So yeah, I think it is an anal muscle. That just blew my mind when I watched that last night. I was like, sphincter.
I don't know how much I've watched Wayne's World in my life. Obviously a lot, because that's where I went immediately. Dawson and Joey, they see Jen buying taffy on the harbour, and Dawson and Jen get into this lengthy conversation in which Jen gives the most articulate and metaphorical speech about why she doesn't want to get into a relationship very quickly.
She could have just said, mate, you've got a massive forehead, you're a bit weird, and your parents have sex too often, so no. But no, she does go into quite a thought out speech.
We get into quite an interesting thing with Dawson, where he says to Jen he doesn't want to become the friend.
He says he wants to be her boy adventure, I think.
Boy adventure!
In my notes I put, Dawson says he wants to be her boy adventure. Ick.
Oh, I didn't see it as ick, you nasty, nasty creature. You're the wrong element.
Boy adventure. Literally, Tamara's on a boat having a boy adventure with Pacey.
Oh, shit, yeah, actually, when you put it like that, you're quite right.
She is absolutely scouting for boys.
Jen says that in New York, she was running too fast or something like that. It's a massively articulate speech that no 15-year-old would ever make. Basically, they go on and on and on about how they're not going to kiss. She says she can't handle it, but what actually I took from this was a lot of subtle stuff about waiting and about romance.
Yeah, no, but I mean, the whole of Dawson's Creek is, they say the things that no 15-year-old would ever say. They do the things that no 15-year-old would ever do. It's like watching the Golden Girls play teenagers, but anyway.
Dawson literally says it's about romance. Jen talks about, like, there's a lot of metaphors about running too fast and needing to slow down, and then Dawson says there should be romance, and she says that we should wait. Now it is all related to kissing, because Dawson says you should kiss, that you could kiss me, and she's like, well, why do, like, wait, and there should be romance, and they have this sort of like really little conversation about that, and it's subtle, but it's there, and it's like, you should wait, and there should be romance, which again is both good and bad.
I like that, and I have to say that in stark contrast to Catherine's interpretation of that, in my notes I put, she can't handle kissing Dawson, but asks if you would like to dance. Fuck my life, you're 15, finger her and go home. You didn't sit there asking people to dance. You didn't sit there pontificating about what you should do or how fast you ran in New York. You know, you drank a bottle of White Lightning and you maybe had a regrettable finger. And I've never drank White Lightning, just for the... I like that that's what I decided to deny first, that I've not drank White Lightning, but I might have had a regrettable finger.
That's where we leave it.
Not on my regrettable finger.
Not on Katie's regrettable finger. This old couple dancing on a boat, which I'm sure is supposed to represent time.
A metaphor for time.
And about being patient and about good things will come.
Hang on, but you've just forgotten the one thing that happens after that. After the old couple dancing on the boat.
I really have, haven't I?
It pans on to Joey, who is watching all this, because she's literally a fucking stalker now. She just pops up everywhere. she's like a dirty old man in a raincoat.
She's spying on everything.
But she's there, and she's got that face on her that looks disappointed and regretful. And basically, I ended my notes for this saying, Joey sees them dancing and gets the feels. You don't want him, Joey. You just don't want anyone else to have him. It's a tale as old as
exactly.
Time. The end.
That's where we leave it. So there's a lot more to say about all of this, because, again, it's quite interesting in terms of this idea of being a honourable, honourable person who just waits for someone to realise they're in love with you as well, which is another fucking terrible representation, which we're going to get into in future episodes. We're about a bottle of white wine in. We would really like to say thank you for listening. We know people are listening and we're really, really grateful.
I'm surprised people are listening, but they are. I mean, it is lockdown. Yeah, so I'm not going to get too happy about it because I would literally listen to the sound of paint drying right now. So we might be like a level up from there.
I hope we're a level up from paint driving, but I'm not convinced.
We're better than Boris Johnson, at least.
Not convinced about that either, to be absolutely honest. You can get in touch with us and follow us on Instagram and Twitter. Our Twitter is Dawson's Weekly with an A, and our Instagram is Dawson's Weekly Pod. We're on Facebook as well at Dawson's Weekly. Get in touch with us, follow us. If you want to review and like and subscribe on any platform you listen to, that would be massively helpful because it does push us up the charts and it does like make a difference. So please, please do if you've got the time and energy to do that, which let's face us, we all fucking do. So our get on there and like and review and be nice to us. We will be back in a week to do episode 3. Thank you so much for listening.